Today is November 28th. I don't have Reb Michael looking down my back, making sure that I mentioned the date, but I'm glad I remembered. We wish a very special Refuah Shleima to Dr. Frank, and hopefully he's back in our ranks as soon as possible. Yeah? Baruch Hashem. Excellent. Okay. Reb Ephraim, we miss you. Okay. So we were talking, we had several explanations, several ideas behind the mitzvah of Milah. I'll just run down very quickly some of them. One is that there are some opinions that say that the body is actually not complete until the arla is cut off. We'll explain that at greater length in a moment. It should be a constant reminder of the Ribbono Shel Olam and the ability to overcome the temptations of a person. And again, as we mentioned, it's not just the temptations of that particular component in the body, but in temptations in general. Certainly one of the most overwhelming temptations is for related to that component of the body, but it's an offering to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Anytime a person refrains from engaging in indulgence for the sake of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that in itself is really like a karban. I'll just add the interests of a person, the desires of a person, is nafshei shel adam mechamadosim, the nefesh. It's called the nefesh of a person, desires, which means that part of the spiritual being is related to the physical being, desires things, and the Torah also says ki adam hu hanefesh. What is the nefesh of a person? Dam. The Mefarshim explain that within the blood of a person lies the desires, the lust, the temptations that a person has lie within the blood. Of course, when a person is weaker, his Yetzirah is weaker, and worked up, he's warm, he's passionate about something, it's a temptation, it's a lust, all related to the blood, interestingly. And so, in a sense, when a person goes after desires, it's very much related to the blood. And that's how we mentioned last time, that this is all considered like a karban to the Ribbono Shel Olam. When you hold back, you withhold your tithes, you withhold your, it's as if you're giving part of your blood to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's as if it's a karban. Okay, the Rambam mentions several reasons. Number one is it weakens physically that component, not just a reminder to minimize, but also it weakens it. It also makes all the people, this was a really interesting one, all the people of one faith all have the same one unifying symbol, certainly the males. And it also obligates, it compels one who has that special sign to behave in a certain way. As we know, even dressing, we know a person dresses a certain way, he feels compelled to behave in a certain way. I once spoke to a fellow who was mistakenly pulled over by a cop. They had checked his license and they typed it in wrong, and it came up as I don't know if it was a serial murderer or a thief or whatever. Well, they brought him to the jail and then they checked it again and they realized their mistake and they let him go. But while he was in the confines of the police station and his hands were tied, he tried to shake his head to get his kippah, his yarmulke, off, because he realized the mistake that they made, but he didn't want it to be a chilul Hashem. And what's the lesson? The lesson is that when a person does wear a yarmulke, you should wear it as often as you can, even at times where it's questionable whether you should, you shouldn't. But if you wear it, it compels you to behave in a certain manner, which is wonderful. So that's one of the ideas of Mila. We also mentioned that it's Avram himself who was the epitome of precious, right? We say that he didn't, the Torah tells us that he didn't know that his wife, he didn't know how beautiful his wife was because he looked beneath the surface. It was Avram Avinu himself who was the one who began with Mila, and we'll speak a little bit more about that in a moment. And the other idea that the Rambam mentions is that it's not a simple procedure. It's not just like a scratch or a minor tattoo. This is a significant procedure, and no one in their right mind would go through this procedure just to feign being a member of this elite group. Okay? So a lot of very, very important and interesting reasons. The Radak, we said, mentioned that the idea is to reminder, a simple reminder, and we quoted the Gemara Menaches, that tells us about the person who was reminded by Tzitzis. The idea is that exterior, external things could be reminder. And we also mentioned, very, very importantly, that these reminders will not help, because sometimes you could stare them in the face. They will not help you unless you're open to reminders. You really want to do the right thing, and when you get that right reminder at the right time, it really helps you. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that the reason for the Mila, we had said, was that it should be in the flesh of a person so that it remains, whether he's alive or dead. It's a constant and very significant symbol that is ingrained in the person. And you don't have it on your sheet here, but the Abarbanel, interestingly, makes that analogy. I didn't see this until later, but I sort of made the analogy of a brand that they use for animals. Wherever the animal may go, it could be recognizable to be the animal belonging to such and such a person. And the same is with the Rebbeinu Shalom. We should always have. And again, the Rebbeinu Shalom doesn't brand us. We brand ourselves. And he allows us to make that choice to brand ourselves. And I told you, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I had reason a little while back to read up on Reconstructionist Judaism. I don't know if that's an oxymoron. I guess it is. Reconstructionist. Let me tell you. Once we mention Reconstruction, I'll tell you a fascinating story. There was a fellow about 50 years ago. He was in Detroit, and he wanted to do some Kiruv before it was very popular. So he put an ad in the paper, free Jewish classes. Puts it in 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Absolutely no one answering. All right, he's about to pull it. One last week, he'll try it. A guy calls him up, says, Rabbi, I'm looking for Jewish classes, but I'm looking for classes in Reconstructionist Judaism. So the guy thinks for a moment. He says, okay, no problem. So the guy comes, and he sits down in a shul, in a local shul in Detroit, and they start to learn. He takes out a Mishnayos. Me'emasai karen neshama ba'arviz. He starts learning Mishnayos with the guy. The guy's wondering, what's Reconstructionist about this? Let's see. 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Finally, by the fourth week, the guy says, Rabbi, I got to tell you, I came here under the assumption that you're going to teach me about Reconstructionist Judaism. All you're teaching me here is this radical, ultra-Orthodox, you know, fundamentalist stuff. So he says to me, listen carefully. I'll be honest with you. He says, in order to reconstruct, you first have to construct, then you have to destruct, and then you have to reconstruct. He says, right now we're constructing. Now, I don't know where that went, that relationship, but the idea is wonderful. They name it themselves, the reformers. They name themselves reform. That's their loss. They're reforming Judaism. So it's not Judaism. Very good. Okay. Sorry to go on a limb here. Okay. Fine. So now then we had the Bechor Shor here that we mentioned that giving up of oneself, whether it be a man or the women have their own mitzvos in this regard, giving up for of your own inclinations and your own temptations and doing so in honor of the Rebbeinu Shalom, and in order to listen to the Rebbeinu Shalom, that is all a form of a karban. It's all a form of a sacrifice to the Rebbeinu Shalom. And I mentioned the story about the fellow with the baseball cap, and the message was that the more we give up, the greater the sacrifice. The great, literally, we call it a self-sacrifice, right? The self-sacrifice is the greatest sacrifice, so the more we have in forms of temptation, we don't ask for them, we don't pursue them, but if we are given them as a challenge and we overcome them, that's the greatest carbon to the Rebbeinu Shalom, and that's apparently what the Rebbeinu Shalom wants. And he wants us to work in this world. Misha tarach be'erev Shabbos, yechol b'Shabbos, the Chazal say, he who works in this world will get to the next world it's not enough to look on a superficial level. You got to look behind the surface, and therefore that might be one of the reasons why the meal itself is painful. So Rabbi Shalom says, this is the first lesson you want to teach a person when they first get enough strength to they're ready, a little baby. Really, we would do it even earlier, but for the mother, whatever. But the idea is working now, doing something painful now for the sake of later, is a very important message. Sure.
We have this, mitzvah tzitzis, and we have the bris milah. I mean, obviously, we look at the tzitzis and everything. I mean, and it's to stop some temptation. What's fundamentally the difference? I mean, you don't see too many people say, when they're about to sin, they call, I have a bris milah. Or should we be thinking that way? Usually we think, I'm wearing tzitzis, it's an avera to do this,
Well, first of all, there is a connection between tzitzis and bris milah. We could discuss that later. There is definitely a connection. The mefarshim speak about it because both of them are, as we mentioned, there for the purpose of reminding a person that the tzitzis says outright, and the milah it says in the mefarshim here. If I'm not mistaken, let me just see very quickly here. I thought I had a source here. Yeah, I don't have it here, but I did have a source, possibly from the Svasemis, where he mentions the connection between Mila and Tzitzis for this specific reason, and he has some sort of remez to the two. We'll have to look at that another time. We'll have to look that up. But now we come to the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch, always, you can always count on him for some fundamental explanation. So let's see the Chinuch. We're on the second column there on page 10. And it says like this, Mishroshei HaMitzvah, from the root of the mitzvah. Again, root, the meaning of the mitzvah is always the root, because that's just the basics to allow us to get some sort of grip, to have some sort of understanding of the mitzvah. But in truth, it's only just, it's not the main part of the mitzvah. The main part of the mitzvah is the tree itself. What is a root of the mitzvah? Lefisha Rotza Hashem Yisbarach Likvoya Ba'am. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam wanted to instill in the nation Asher Hivdil Leois Nikra al-Shamay, that he separated, that we should be called by his name. He wanted to instill in us Ois Kavua Begufam, a sign in our bodies, Lahavdilam Mishara Amim Bitsuras Gufam. We should be different in our external appearance. Even in our external appearance, that difference between us and the nation should be manifest. Just like our nefesh, what the Rebbeinu Shlom demands of us and our abilities to reach higher, we are separated from the Goyim. We have greater challenges. We have greater purpose in this world and expectations. So the Rebbeinu Shlom wants us to be different and in our external. Because externals are important, obviously only to a certain degree, but externals are important. Asher moitzom umoivom einam einenu shova. Now these are very important words. Our comings and goings are not the same. Now, unfortunately, we live in a world where the gap has become a little, has been closed a little. But the fact is, if you watch a Jew that's living a very basic religious from lifestyle, what's driving him is, at least what should be, hopefully, is the Torah. And that everything he does and whatever he's involved in is the Torah itself. So his comings and goings are centered around the Torah. Where he sends his children and pays untold dollars for tuition, and the fact that he goes to work in a certain way and expects of himself to earn certain wages, a lot of it has to do with the greater expectations, greater challenges as far as, needs of the family. Basically, there's a higher standard of living. There's a you need more kosher food. You need more money for kosher food. You need a lot of things. It costs money. It's much cheaper to go to McDonald's than it is to go to Citroen and Rose. And I'm just, that's not a good example. But we're not comparing apples to apples. Okay. But the bottom line is that it is expensive to be a frum Jew. It is. And our comings and goings, how we talk, what we say, is just totally different. Just totally different. And, you know, our clothing was different. Now it's a little less different, but it's still, if you watch a person who's not trying to assimilate, he's different. You watch him, you could see. Hopefully he's able to have a beard. See, everybody here has a beard. Okay, good. You could say that. Even if you don't have a beard, okay, that's what's necessary. But you're not shaving your head bald, and there's many externals that are different, and the more reminders we have, the better it is. But the bottom line is, our comings and goings are very different, and the same, and those are just a reflection of the difference in our neshamas, in our nefesh. I said over yesterday, fascinating thing. If you want to see, one of the ways you can see the difference between us and the secular world is the following. I gave a speech yesterday at the girls' high school about Kavod HaBriyos, the dignity of of humans, whether they be Jewish or not. Right, the fact that we are on a higher level is there's expectations of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and we have a responsibility to live on a higher level. But we have to recognize that there's a human dignity to every single human being in the world in the Tzelem Elokim. And one of the things I mentioned was that embarrassing somebody is one of the worst forms of infringement on that Kavod HaBriyos, right? The Gemara says it's even equivalent to Ritzicha. There are some Rishonim that hold that it's Yarek Val Yavri. Actually, if somebody forces you to embarrass somebody else, you have to rather give up your life, literally. Not just that the Gemara is saying that it's a Kilo Hargai, as if you killed him, but it's literally as if you killed him in Halacha. There are some Paiskim that say that. But in any case, I made a search yesterday for the words embarrassing others. You could try it yourself. And I figured we'd come up with some articles that have to do with how to be careful not to embarrass others. And even if it's for a selfish reason, perhaps, of, you know, it's unbecoming, it doesn't reflect well on you, etc. Almost non-existent. Until the second, third, fourth page, I don't know what it was, there was some article there which was Torah-based. It was from age.com. I believe, and it was maybe from Chabad.org, whatever it may be. There are articles there that obviously were popular enough to get up to the third or fourth page, but of the first one, there were three or four pages or more. There were many pages of articles. What were the articles about? You know what a carrot is, right? Yes, the little carrot. Yeah, am I right? That's what it's called, the little carrot when you add something, right? How to avoid embarrassing. Little carrot, yourself in front of others. It's all self-centered. That's a wonderful thing to avoid embarrassing yourself in front of others. It's also important. But what's worse? They have that too. How to embarrass others. They have that as well. The concept of putting a heavy stress on not embarrassing others is almost non-existent in the secular world. In fact, if you look around, you almost can't get a promotion anywhere unless you put down other people and raise yourself. It's a terrible environment for these kind of sensitivities. It's horrible. In fact, in order to become president of the United States, you have to be a crook. There's no other way. So what does that tell you about the system? We keep on getting political here. This is not good. Okay, but my point is,
knock each other.
The horrible hate campaigns is really bad. In any case, very bad reflection. In any case, point number one is he wants us to be different in our externals as well. As a reminder, and as many reminders as we can have, that's important. Tzitzis, the mila, which are related, fine. Now he says an interesting thing. V'nikva ha'hevdel b'gulas hazov, this difference that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants us to have is in that particular component of the body. That's an expression. Gulas Hazav is from Kehelas, the end of Kehelas. Why that particular component? So we had seen earlier that somebody had mentioned, I forgot who, that he didn't want it to be an embarrassment. It shouldn't be the Bechar Shar. One citation right above. So he says that it shouldn't be an embarrassment. It should be in a private area, so it shouldn't be an embarrassment. But here he says something even more profound. He says, specifically that component of the body, Lefishu siba lekiyum hamin. That component is the crucial component that's necessary for the continuity of mankind. You know, when you... I have this all the time on the computer. When you change a file, the master file, you always have to have one master. And then when you make copies, you always want to make sure you copy the master. Otherwise, if you make changes to any of the copies, it's not going to be... So you have one master file that you constantly update, mailing lists, whatever it might be, right? And then you make copies of that. Whatever is used to create, to recreate, is however improved and whatever betterment you've done to that main, the master, we'll call it the master copy, is going to be reflected in the copies. So you have a situation where you have a human being. The Rebbe Shem specifically said, you're going to procreate, you're going to clone yourself, but you're going to duplicate yourself, so to speak. You want that duplication to have that beauty and that idea of the mitzvah of Mila, that everything that it represents, all the ideas that we've seen till now, should all be reflective in the continuity and the recreation of a new person. And therefore, the Rebbe Shem specifically chose that component of the body. Very interesting aspect here. Now, he says, Milvad sheyesh by tashlum tzuras haguf. Another very important point. Besides the fact that by removing this skin, we're perfecting the physical body of the person, aside from the other two ideas he just mentioned, kemoisha amarnu, as we mentioned. Now, listen to what he says. This is why he believes, others had said earlier, the Rambam, he dismissed this idea that we're not perfect, we're not created perfect. He says, no, the Rebbe Shem deliberately created us in such a way that we're not totally perfect. Kemoisha amarnu. Like we said, the Om Hanivchar, the chosen people, Chafetz Hashem Yisbarach LaHashlim Tchunasai. The Rebbe Shem wanted him to perfect himself. Look at this. V'ratza liyais hashlama al yedei Adam. The Rebbe Shem wanted deliberately that perfection should come about by way of us humans. We should be the catalyst for that perfection. V'lay barei shalom yibetni. He deliberately did not complete us from the womb. L'rameze love, look at this. It's the reverse. Until now we were talking about that this is a manifestation of the internal. Yes, now he's saying the external will have an influence on the internal. How's that? To hint to the person, ki kasher tashlum tzuras gufay al yaday, just like he himself was able to complete and to perfect his external body by way of himself, it's done by humans. Cain biyadai, so too it is in within his power, lahashlim tsuras nafshai, to perfect himself, his inner components, behechsher pulaisa, by way of his actions. What a lesson to a person. What an important and profound lesson. So until now, again, we were talking about the externals being a reflection of the internals. Here we now have the internals being affected by the message of the externals. Let me just add a couple things here. Number one, I wanted to mention, we mentioned earlier that this is a reflection of the difference between Yisrael and the Amim. If there's ever a place where you want to see the difference between the Yisrael and the Amim, there are subtleties, there are things like embarrassing, it's not such a subtlety, but one of the main places where you will see the big difference is, where is there something that you find the nations of the world engrossed in, totally waist deep, totally enveloped with this temptation, with this lust, and the Jewish people strive every day to perfect themselves and to avoid it entirely and distance themselves, and there's halachas in the Torah, and the Rabbanan created fences to guard ourselves from even getting close to anywhere near such a thing. And that's obviously the Yetzirah of Arayas. The Yetzirah of adultery, of indecent behavior. So if that's the case, if the purpose of making this bris is to show the difference, to emphasize and to reflect the difference between Yisrael and the Amim. Isn't it appropriate that it should be done in that component of the body that is related to those activities? I think that's a beautiful, beautiful, what do you call it? And we have to always look around and look at our existence and the world around us and take lessons from it. We could learn so much just by observing why the Rabbanu Shalom created us like this, why the Rabbanu Shalom created the world like this. Just the other day, there was somebody that asked the question of why the Rabbanu Shalom created. You look around in the animal kingdom, you look around in the ecosystem. Much of the ecosystem wouldn't survive unless you had one feeding the next. You have the survival of the fittest. You have animals running around hunting. And why did the Rabbanu Shalom create the world that way? So someone asked me this question. I gave him the following answer. I hope the idea is true. I hope it's the right answer. It certainly might be one of the reasons why the Rabbanu Shalom did this. A person in this world, if you think about it, the way the Mesillas Yesharim says, there's a Yetzer Hara coming at you from every angle. From every angle. And if you will be like a Gibor Chayil, the Mesillas Yesharim says towards the beginning, if you'll be like a warrior and you're going to fight off on every direction, anybody who played video games, I haven't played video games in many, many years, but when I was a kid and they first came out, they were these video games where things were coming at you from different sides. That's what it is. You have to be a Gibor Chayil. A human being has to be a Gibor Chayil. But you know what? Ignorance is bliss. The soldier could lie down, he's tired, he go to sleep, and he has enemies coming up on him from every angle. But I'm tired. Okay, very nice. You're also going to be dead. Right? If he doesn't, he's got to get up and just try to fend them off as much as you can. If you don't realize that if you go to sleep and you ignore things, it's not ignorance is bliss. You're going to be eaten up in a moment. That's the way the Rabbanu Shalom wanted us to fight off the Yetzer Hara. That's the kind of environment he put us in, that we're constantly inundated by horrible, horrible influences from all around. You walk down the block, as we mentioned. It's unbelievable. You can't do anything today without being tested 100 times. But it's so easy to forget that. A lot of it is spiritual, and there's not going to be any physical pain immediately, and it's not going to be difficult, and you're not going to have emotional pain either right away. It takes time, and it creeps up on you. So what does the Rabbanu Shalom do? He puts us in a world where if you look around, you see that there are many, many animals that have to live that way. They have to constantly be in fear of someone preying on them. Not praying for them, praying on them. Yes? And we have to take a lesson from that. So you look around and you see things that go on around us. Yetzer Haras are everywhere. And if they are everywhere, that gives us a lesson that we have to strengthen ourselves. There'll be a time that we can go to sleep. After 120 years, we'll go to sleep. Sleep is for the dead, as they say. Today, we sleep just barely enough that we need just to be able to strengthen ourselves to the, right? Just as much as we need. And then we're on to the next, right? And that's the way we conduct our lives. And so the Mila certainly teaches us that we have to have Yetzer Haras everywhere, and we have to be constantly aware of that. And that's why specifically the bris is made with this component of the body to teach us that lesson. Be'ez Hashem, we'll hopefully finish the sugya of Mila when we meet tomorrow. Shukayah.